I think we're going to close it out with one more story, and then me and Dwight are going to take it home. So, Sean Boyle, everybody.
I have a proposal for Andrew.
Okay.
Start a fan fiction blog where you properly end our beloved TV series. I will read all of those. Instant fan.
My name is Seriously consider
this. It means a slash fiction.
Slippery slope.
I write a blog called lessonsforavery.com. Basically, I provide life lessons to my hypothetical genderless child, Avery. And I have a funny aside before I get to my story about this story. Last month, I did a really short... I try to write short. If something takes more than 5 minutes to read, I think I'm not done editing. That's just the way I like to write. So, but last month was pretty dark and grim. People responded to it. I'm proud of it. But I'm glad I read it in the middle, because people like Steve and some other readers had some really fun, lighthearted, enjoyable stuff that brings the mood back. So I was thinking about my dark writing, and I was realizing that I'm proud of it, but it was easy to write. It was really easy to write. I carry these dark memories around like a laundry list of pride. Like, I'm that guy that posts photos of his surgery on Facebook. Like, that's how badass I am. So, I wanted to try to write a happy story of my childhood. And I did. And it was long. And it was hard to write, but it was one of the longest things I've written. So, instead of it being 5 minutes, it's 10 minutes. So, I messaged Eric just to say, like, hey, this is a little bit longer than my typical stuff. So, just a heads up, you know. I said, it's fine, I'll put you last. And that meant a lot to me. I mean, now I didn't tell him it was a happy story or anything, but I'm so glad I can tell you guys something happy before we leave tonight.
Why not gonna bring it down though? We have some really depressing songs.
As long as it's not my fault, I will leave you happy. This is my story. It's about me. So. We have the spotlight. All right. So this story is called Camp Unknown. Hello, Avery. I love sharing stories about my childhood with you, and all too often I can only recall the darker and tragic fare of my past. I wonder if certain moments of an untarnished joy are like the rare diamonds of memories shaped by the miles of earth hiding it from sight. Thankfully, I've discovered one of these rare historical gems of my past, and the more I contemplate its meaning, the more I can see how it has influenced every good decision that I've ever made. I was 13 years old and on my way to my first and only summer camp. So far, far away from home and every familiar face I had ever known, this is the story of Camp Unknown. Camp was an immediate contrast to my everyday life. I had been living in a household that had a kitchen filled with delicious snacks, sodas, and frozen pizzas. I was accustomed to eating at will and with king-esque proportions. At camp, there was no food or sugary beverages available outside of the cafeteria's three-meal schedule. I could no longer wash down a jumbo bag of chips with a 2 liter of Mountain Dew and call that dinner. This change taught me the difference between wants and needs. Avery, let me be clear. A 2 liter of Mountain Dew is not something you need. The best part of this dietary shock was discovering a new love in a thing they called water. There was this one special water fountain right outside of my cabin, and I would close my eyes, lean in close, purse my lips, and let it bestow my thirst with a blissful, brain-freezing, hydrating love. I've never tasted a better fluid to this day. First loves never die. The next important discovery made at camp was in the form of a new social challenge. The simplicity of my childhood friendships was being eroded by the winds of popularity and puberty. This change of social climate presented a threatening possibility that all my friendships could easily go extinct. Camp was starkly different. You were a stranger among strangers, being offered an opportunity to be a genuine character with a fresh start. It was simple. Everybody was a friend by default, and there was no incentive to be an enemy. The strange part of the social setting is, I really can't remember most of these people. they became this fog of faceless, friendly equals. So I may not remember their names or recognize any of them if I saw them today. But I learned more about socializing from these nameless memories than any of my past or current local best mates. So two of these strangers stood out above the rest, and they will never be forgotten. One came from a 5-minute conversation with my cabin leader. He was probably in his early 20s and had a general purpose duty just to break up fist fights, tell us we're not evil for masturbating. Not a bad message, but pretty weird. And most importantly, he had to make sure nobody dies or gets molested. I never had any one-on-one interaction with him until this one special day called the Hobby Fair. All the leaders were to present a hobby of their choice, and we were supposed to pick something we had never tried before. Every table had a long line of kids figuring out what activity to try, except one. And I saw my cabin counselor sitting there beneath a sign, Bible study. I thought, why would anybody choose to study the Bible? As a 13-year-old, I sincerely didn't know that people chose religion as a fun way to spend their time. I was raised in a Catholic family, and I had been treating my birth faith like a chore. So I summoned the courage to approach him with my curiosity. I asked, why would you want to do this on a Saturday? He said, I enjoy studying the Bible. It makes me happy. I replied, has anybody signed up? He calmly states, none yet. I asked, what will you do if nobody does? He smiled warmly and responded, I will enjoy my Bible alone. From this conversation, a controversial question stuck to the back of my mind. Was he happy because he believed in a God? Or was he happy because he believed in his own choices? The answer to this question seemed so clear and implied for him, and very much the opposite for myself. This moment became one important piece of finding the faith in my own choices. With his inspired conviction, I firmly believe in my choice to sign up for soccer. That was a long setup, but glad you done it. The second memorable person was the evident poor kid. He wore a large stained t-shirt that had this huge clown face on it. Frightening. At night, our cabin would host these playful wrestling matches, and this kid would physically dominate everyone he faced. And he would even celebrate each victory with a frightening impersonation of King Kong. And they were scarier if the clown shirt was off. Later that week, the campground finally opened the pool. You had to take a swimming test to receive a special wristband that permits you to swim in the deep end. I passed this easily and spent all my pool hours jumping off the diving board and playing a game of deep water treasure hunt. The rules were, you had to challenge someone to collect the most sunken objects from the bottom of the pool with just a single breath. And just as my clown-shirted friend did in the wrestling ring, I dominated every challenger that dared to try. One day, I saw my friend walking up to the diving board. He was wearing the proper wristband. And of course, he swims in his horrible clown shirt. He carefully shuffles to the end of the board, pinches his nose, and closes his eyes and leaps forward into the water. In theory, he was going to use the bottom and push himself towards the ladder. In reality, I can guess his feet didn't reach the bottom, and then he didn't know how to swim. I waited in a single moment of panic, wondering, how can a person not know how to swim? And when is an adult going to save him? After that never-ending second of panic, I took action. I dove in headfirst, grabbed him by his gigantic thighs, and I used all my leg-kicking strength to push him up and over to the ledge of the pool. By then, a crowd gathered, and thankfully, they pulled him up over the ledge and got him out of the pool. He coughed up a half gallon of pool water and managed to make a small joke of all this by saying, "I knew I could do it." Through the culmination of these different events, I had discovered a belief system within myself. For the first time ever, I grasped a new notion that personal worth wasn't attained through popularity, faith, status, intelligence, or wealth. It was exclusively defined by the value of your actions within the scope of your opportunities. Now, this camp was not for normal kids. I was sent there because I was labeled an emotionally troubled youth. There were some obvious red flags that made it easy to pick me out of the crowd, but looking back as an adult, I would like to think there was a teacher or social worker that heard some sort of cry for help. Whatever the motives for sucking me may have been, it proves an all-important lesson that no matter where, when, or why, we all have a responsibility to share, care, and act, because every human being deserves an opportunity to be more than just another sad story. Just a quick plug on lessonsforavery.com. I've started two short form series, one called Role Models for Avery. I did one on Louis C.K. And then the other one is called Awkward Parenting. Just my own memories of awkward moments with my parents. And the first one just went live tonight. And it's about taking my mom to see Chasing Amy when I was 15 years old. A little homophobic mother, too. Extra dose of it. So, thank you.
Yeah, Sean.